Welcome to the Fly Culture Podcast, bringing you interviews, reviews, and fishing tips. Here's your host, Pete Tygus.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Fly Culture Podcast. My good friend Theo Pike wrote a piece for The Guardian a few years back now about the five of the best fly fishing spots in the UK. If Theo's saying these sorts of things, then you need to listen, or I feel I have to listen anyway. And I was pleased in that top five that my backyard, Dartmoor, was second. But the one that came up first was the fishing and the area of Ascent in the northwest of Scotland. And it sounds a magical, wonderful place. I can fast forward a little bit there as well, because we carried an image from today's guest of his son fishing one of these tiny little streams. And it's one of those things that's niggled at me a little bit. And it just looks such a wonderful stream that I had to find out a little bit more. So I'm really pleased to introduce today's guest, and that's Stuart Yates. And he's based up in Ascent. He is a fishing guide, and he takes people on all sorts of fishing adventures, or safaris, as he calls them, around the area. And I wanted to learn a little bit more about that. And it's so varied and so interesting. I thought everyone out there would enjoy it too. So I'm really pleased to introduce Stuart Yates to the podcast today. Stuart, how are you doing?
I'm very well, Pete. How's yourself?
Very good, thank you. I've managed to finish all the turkey and everything that goes with it. So I'm fighting fit. I'm waiting for the rivers to drop, and then we'll be getting going. But how's things up there? How is the weather as well? I guess you might have had a little bit of snow as well up there.
Yeah, we had covering of snow. We don't really get, people think that the Highlands is this blanket of wonderful whiteness in the winter, but actually on the west coast down at sea level it's often just really quite dreich, to be honest. It's a bit cold and wet at the moment, but we did have a nice covering of snow the other morning, woke up to the most amazing scenes. But yeah, it's kind of melting away now and refreezing and melting, and it's not very pleasant out there, so we're just sitting indoors today and enjoying the fire mostly.
And I guess you're, like everyone else, looking forward to putting 2020 behind you. How was fitting in the fishing for you? Did you manage to get fishing? Did you manage to work at all? How was that, and how did you find the fishing last season just gone?
Yeah, I mean, God, there's nothing like it ever before. So it's, you know, it was just about to kick off, wasn't it? It was all set and ready to go back then in March, I had a hell of a season booked. For pre-bookings, I had May was absolutely 100% solidly booked. June was 90% booked, and July was about 80% booked. And then it just shut. It was like, oh, right, what are we going to do now? So it was kind of tricky. It was very difficult to cope with, to be honest. The uncertainty, the fear, it was really tough. I was able to just sort of keep things going with some little videos and stuff on sort of fishing-related subjects, which kept me in touch with the people who follow me digitally and still want their Ascent fix, because this place really, really does get under your skin in a good way. And so we held on. And then I actually had, I thought I need to do something special to kick this off. So it was when lockdown was finally being eased, and it just happened to coincide with the most perfect summer's evening. I mean, that was the good thing about the lockdown, was the weather here was amazing. But when lockdown finally was officially lifted, it actually was the most perfect summer's evening. Beautiful rise going on the lochs. And I popped out to a local loch, maybe, I don't know, probably 3/4 of a mile from me, so I wandered over there. And sure enough, I crept up to the loch. I was specimen hunting after a big fish, so I was taking it very slow and carefully. And I had my dry fly on the water, and I was just waiting. And then in the bay to my left, I saw this lovely fish just coming in, working the bay, going back out to the deep water, coming in. And I was like, right, okay. So I timed it, and I watched him move back out and crept around quickly and got myself in position, got my fly in the water, and sure enough, literally, I don't know, probably less than 10 seconds after the fly landed on the water, there was this lovely big and just and fish on. And it was my biggest ever first trout of the season in my 20 plus, well, actually 40 plus years of actual fishing, 20 plus years of fly fishing. My biggest ever first trout of the season at 18 inches. Which is a real specimen for up here, where your average fish up here is 6 to 9 inches, and the whole thing was caught on video. So there is a video out there of me having an epic battle with this fish, because I like to, you know, it's, you need to have the when you have it, as you said to you earlier, the podcast you did of the golden age, and you talked about the digital presence, and for me, as a business, the Ascent fly fishing is my job. I'm quite uncommon in that is all I do. That is my job. It's very seasonal. I work at it, and I maintain my presence through the winter as best I can, with a massive help from my amazing wife, who's very skilled in the social media side of things. And then come sort of, it's getting earlier and earlier, but now it's sort of like mid-May, it all kicks off. And in 2019, from mid-May through to the... It was actually through the whole of September, I ended up having 10 days off, excluding the weekends. We keep weekends free for family stuff, but you know, the entire season was non-stop, just flat out. It was crazy. Great, but crazy. You sort of hit the end of the summer and go, just what the hell just happened? It's kind of amazing. But so getting back to what 2020 was, obviously nothing like that. It was, right, let's go. Oh, no, let's don't. And so I had this amazing first fish. And then it was kind of weird, Pete, you know, because I actually didn't enjoy really going fishing when I wasn't with clients, because I knew that you know, I knew from my Google Calendar that this day, this perfect day, and I go out onto the wee burn, and it was just the most perfect day. And I would have just the most wonderful days fishing, you know, picking your way up the burn, picking the pockets, fishing the glides, exploring your way up, seeing how the pools have changed with the winter spate, and I knew that this was the day I was supposed to be out with John. Oh God, yeah. And he sat there in Liverpool and is, you know, stuck, can't get out. And it really affected me quite deeply. I suddenly realised how much guiding actually now gives me these days. The reward it gives me for seeing a client's pleasure, satisfaction, and engagement, and watching that. I absolutely love the client that has never been to Ascent before and who is a seasoned fly fisher. They're just the best ever, because you just, you know, it's pretty easy to guide them because you don't have to teach them to fly cast, but it's, you know, it's watching them and explaining to them. And I always like to put myself as a guide who'll take you fishing rather than just the fishing guide, and by that I mean I love to talk about the geology, the flora and fauna, the funny stories, the history, to give people a real sort of sense of the place, as well as the amazing fishing. And yeah, for a large part of 2020, I didn't have that. So it was, I guess I didn't realize how much it actually really meant to me, or it has become to mean to me, of having clients, and many of which close to 40%. This is a testament to I'm doing something right, because close to 40% of my business now is repeat clients every year, who have their Ascent pilgrimage and want me to be continue to be part of that, which is a massive honour for me. It's right up there with when someone gives my services as a gift, very often for a significant birthday for a partner. And someone wants to give a day out fishing with me for a 60th or 70th birthday present or 50th birthday present. It really does mean a massive deal to me. It's like, wow, you know, this is something that's really important, and I'm being part of it. It's something that it's another level really for me. It's an amazing, in quotes, job. To have already, and to be for that to add a bit more of it. But then in 2020, it suddenly started. It was the 21st of July, accommodation was allowed to open again. And it was like flicking, you know the scene on Frankenstein when he puts the lever down and the sparks fly and suddenly there's lightning everywhere and it all goes freaking crazy. That was pretty much it up here. For everyone, it was just it was difficult to cope with, to be honest. It was difficult to cope with for many people. I was able just to crack on and get my head down and say, right, let's get going. But for a lot of local people, I think it really caused, you know, again, with the stress still being there, because COVID, of course, hadn't gone away. It was, yeah, really tough for some people up here to suddenly be literally swamped by tourism. And it was sort of, yeah, short, sharp shock. And then come sort of the end of the school holidays, it just basically all switched off again. And it's been disturbingly quiet since then. Obviously, I'm not getting the bookings. In a way, almost thankfully, I'm not getting the booking inquiries for next year, because a lot of the bookings from this year, and I have to say a massive thank you to any of my clients and friends who are listening who had booked for 2020. I can say with one exception, because there was no way they could get around it because this was a school, but everybody said to me, look, keep the deposit. I'm not cancelling. I'm postponing. Which meant a huge deal to me. It not only helped financially, but showed that people are coming back. You know, when this is all resolved, no matter how, they are going to come back, I don't think I'd be able to carry on if I didn't know they were coming back. But looking forwards, it's like, it's a hell of a backlog to get through, and then move on from there. So yeah, 2020, not going to forget it ever. We are definitely living through a major event in history, looking ahead, it can only get better, hopefully we're going to see that the vaccine's working and it's all going to be straightforward. So that's what I'm hoping for at the moment. But 2020, I still had some amazing days out in that short window of July, August, September, incredible days out, days with families, introducing people to fishing. There was one standout, I have to say, and I'm going to have to try and not get emotional about this, okay? But you'll have to forgive me, okay, if I do get emotional. But this was really, really something, okay? There was a repeat client who'd come out with me the year before. Lovely old chap. And he'd had his battles with cancer, and he'd beaten it last year. And it was great, and he was coming back this year. He came back this year, and he didn't actually tell me until we were up at the end of Loch Veity that it had come back. And his current treatments were simply keeping him alive for as long as possible. And so he came all the way up to Ascent. And you know, this guy's not no spring chicken. He came all the way up to Ascent. And you know, we'd got all sorts of things planned and booked. Who's going to go with you? Who's going to go for a try for a salmon? We're going to maybe even have a crack at the pollock. But the trip he really wanted was, yeah, if you're going to have a bucket list trip, it is take a boat to the top end of Veity, under the shadow of Sylvan and fish there. And so we went and did that, and the weather was on and off and pretty awful. The fishing was pretty tough, but we had a great day out. And the following day we were supposed to go out for the Salmon River, which was on its knees, unfortunately. But, you know, we were going to go and, you know, maybe I thought, well, we'll go for the trout that are in the stream instead. But he let me know that the day had just taken so much out of him that he decided to cut his visit short and head back down south. So that was probably his swan song.
Yeah, it's an amazing story.
Tough.
And that story, along with everything else you mentioned, you can see your passion for your job. And it is a job, as you say. But it is more than that. It does transcend to that. You're in the service industry. You clearly deeply care for the people you're taking out. You want them to love the fishing like you do as well. And it's already coming across to me that, which is wonderful to hear. And some of the places that you mentioned there, in my mind's eye, I've got this picture of Ascent and the wide variety of fishing that's sort of kind of on your doorstep, framed by mountains. Could you, for our listeners as well, describe Ascent for us so that we can get an idea of where all of this passion is coming from a place that you clearly love so much?
No. No, I say that because it is indescribable. It is just, oh God, what a place. I've travelled a bit. I actually haven't done that much fishing globally. I've had a very, very little fishing globally. That's the big gap in my angling CV, is I haven't done much fishing outside of Ascent. But if you come to Ascent, you'll understand why that is. Literally, within... I get in the car, within 10 minutes, I can be at some of the most incredible lochs with pure wild trout in them. You can choose to either go to a loch where you're probably going to bag up with, you know, up to 30, 40 trout of maybe up to a maximum of 12 inches for the day. Or you could go to a loch in where there's bigger, fewer trout and go stalking, specimen hunting. Or you can go to... What is one of my favourite things is the small streams, the wee birds. They're just magical things. And when they're on, you know, the fish here are very small, but they are absolutely perfect trout. You can get a trout in the burns that's a 12-year-old trout that's 4 inches long, because they don't, you know, they only grow to their environment. You know, they're like, you put a goldfish in a tank, it will grow to the size that is suited to that tank. But what you can get is some incredibly prolific days. I've had days where literally I have had over 200 of these beautiful little trout in your hand in a day. And when I say beautiful, you have never seen a fish more utterly perfect. I call them porcelain trout because they look like Da Vinci has literally spent 6 months trying to make each one absolutely dot perfect. People talk, there's a very much overused phrase of fin perfect, but to me, these little trout in the streams, they're magical little things. And the fishing, that type of fishing is so intimate. You're fishing with a short rod, maximum 3-weight rod. I like the Fuller Flex rods, the glass rods for this. Having said that, I tried one rod this summer that was the Orvis Clearwater, which is a very fast, modern, ultralight rod. And I didn't think I'd like it, but it was absolutely awesome. But I do still tend to go back to the glass. I've got one that I... a rod that I'm diverging a little onto equipment. But I got a Reddington 2-weight butter stick, which is a really full flex glass rod. But due to manufacturing backlogs and supply chain issues due to COVID, I was supposed to get this, I hoped to get this rod early in the season or mid-season, and it didn't arrive until the 12th of December. So I've been sitting here looking at this rod, fondling the cork handle and desperate to get out onto the water with it. So you've got the small streams there, the most incredible intimate fishing. The other side of it is the coastal fishing, coastal fly fishing for pollock. Absolutely just mind-blowingly powerful fish, ounce for ounce. I've never experienced an explosive dive like a pollock, like a good-sized pollock, say over 5 pounds, which is not uncommon off the coast here. My best session was 1 February. In 1 hour, I had 5 fish over 5 pounds. Wow. In an hour. The freezer was well filled, and again, it's really nice up here because I go out and I keep some of the pollock that I catch, and not only do we eat it ourselves, but we then go out and trade it with other people who maybe have some venison in the freezer or they grow their own winter veg. So we actually have a nice bit of barter system going up here as well. This is all within 15 minutes of my house. The pollock, the coastal fishing is intimidating. It is an incredible place to fish. It can feel extremely raw and brutal and exposed. When I'm going fishing on my own, I often actually tie myself to the rock. As well as wearing a life jacket, because I don't want to take any chances. And of course, we do also have a couple of beautiful spate rivers here as well. The salmon rivers are the main two here, the River Imber and the River Kirkcaig. Quite short rivers, but again, it sort of epitomizes the area in that they're small, short rivers. The Kirkcaig, it's probably only about 4 or 5 kilometers long, and quite a sharp drop on it. So a lot of unfishable water in that, but a lot of beautiful pools. My favorite salmon beat is probably the Upper Kirkcaig, because that is full-on adventure fishing. You're clambering down rock faces, and it's not for the unsteady or unfit. It's great fun, exploratory fishing. And it's the exploratory thing is a massive part of the fishing up here. I've fished up here for 40 years. I've fly fished on and off, but lately I've just become just a fly fisher, still every single season I discover something new up here, and since I've started doing this as my work, my employment, that has actually increased because it has made me go out and survey new places, investigate new streams, remind myself of lochs. I would honestly say I might have fished all of the lochs in Ascent, but there are over 400 of them, so it's quite difficult to keep track, you know. I keep on finding myself looking at the map and going, oh God, I can't, and then I'll go up there and go, oh yeah, I remember this, or I'll go up there and think, I don't think I fished this, and you know, I wonder, and what kind of loch is it going to be? Is it going to be a really densely populated loch, or is it going to be, am I going to find another one of those amazing lochs that has these massive trout in it that just, you know, are there all the time, and people don't realise it. I mean, I think it's interesting as well, I actually changed my approach to my own time fishing, which is quite precious these days, when I was fishing for trout, and I actually did less fishing. Sometimes I actually found myself just taking my fly rod for a walk. And I would just find a loch that looked interesting, and I would, you know, look at it, walk around it a bit, find a nice high vantage point, put the polarizers on and just sit down and get the coffee out and just sit. Enjoy where you were. You're looking out at the beautiful view, watching the deer wander across the hill, and just look down at the water. And oh my goodness, I started to understand the wild brown trout more. And I fundamentally, for the big trout, if I'm going after a big trout, I fundamentally changed my approach to it to a more cautious, quiet approach, because realizing how these fish feed, and how they act, and how cowardly these fish are. A big trout is the biggest coward in the loch. The slightest hit of anything and they're gone. They're just, I call them dissolving trout, because you look at them and literally you blink and then you can't see them anymore. It's, you know, they're there in absolute plain sight and then they just disappear in front of your eyes. They melt away. I've seen a seagull flying 200 feet above the loch, and that's been enough to spook a trout, a feeding trout, off into the depths, because they've detected it. So these fish are pretty challenging to catch. But I changed my approach, and it was actually, it was kind of like, that was actually what, 8 years ago, was when I started this change. And the results of that at the beginning of the season is what prompted me to say, right, I'm going to try and do this as a job. I think I could do it. When I first moved back up here, I was a handyman, and I was very successful, and I was as busy as I possibly could be. And then along came Corwin, my amazing boy, my protege. And there's no sort of really dependable childcare up here. And Monica was the main earner. So I thought, right, I'll basically be a house husband for a couple of years. And then once he needs less attention, I'll go back to, you know, Wee Jobs was the name of my company. I'll just go back to handyman. So towards the end of that 2 year period, once I could get him into a rucksack and take him fishing with me, I got a good start to the season. I went out as much as I could, because I knew I was going to have to go back to work soon. So I would just stick him in the rucksack, and he's had many a nappy changed on the bank of a loch, built up his resistance to midges, that sort of thing. And so I went out and thought, right, let's get a really, you know, I'm really going to hit the water hard whilst I get the chance, because I'm going to have to go and do proper work soon. And I started catching big fish with this new approach. And in the first 3 and a bit months of the season, I caught 8 inches, which is unheard of in Ascent. just you know, these fish are the each one of these fish was the fish of a lifetime, and I opened a Pandora's box, and I remember the exact loch that I was on, exact where I'd caught this fish, and this was actually a pretty poor example. It was about a 21-inch fish, but it probably barely weighed 2 pounds because it was long, thin and black, and I think that was just because it was an old fish, so I handled him very gently and put him straight back. But I then sort of sat on the bank composing myself, and I thought, I seem to know what I'm doing. And I'd been following at that time, you know, lots of fishing guides on Facebook and Instagram and stuff, and I thought, and it just hit me that, you know what, there's not a fishing guide here. Here I am. I'm sitting in the middle of what is, you know, without being biased, amongst some of the best trout fishing in the world. And I can say that with confidence because I've had clients from all over the world that will attest to that. It stands shoulder to shoulder with BC, with Patagonia, with Iceland, with Tasmania, with New Zealand. It stands up there with them, but for different reasons, not for big trout, but because of the fishing, because of the feeling of the place. And I thought, God, I wonder, could I be a fly fishing guide? Is that possible? I mean, as you can tell, I can talk a lot. And I'm passionate about it. So I went back home, and I said to Monica, I said, do you think I could do this? And she straight away said, you'd be bloody brilliant. You'd be fantastic. Do it. Do it as a job. You know, as long as you treat it as a job and it's, you know, you work at it, yeah, go for it. And, you know, the first couple of years was client. It was quiet with clients. But then it got established. Probably by the end of year three, I'd probably broken even with the outlay on equipment and stuff. I have to say a massive thank you to ADBOS, the Angling Development Board of Scotland, because I got involved with them to do my UKCC Angling Coach Level 1 and 2. And through them, through the coaching licensing system, I also got the insurance that I needed, because see, trying to phone up an insurance company and say, I'm a fishing guide, what was my insurance? They'll be like, a what? Oh, I don't know. So, yeah, it was kind of common. But, yeah, the ADBOS, they do a hell of a lot of good work. A massive thank you to them. That really helped to have the... And actually, what really helped as well is these... I'd always say to people as well, if they're looking for guides and things like that, the UKCC coaching certificate is a really, really good thing to have. Not only because if someone's a licensed coach, you know that straight away they've got all the boxes ticked. They've got their child protection. They've got their insurance. They've got the procedures in place. They are professionals. They know that you do things properly. You don't get your coaching license without actually doing these things properly. But the other thing is these. The course that they go on is a coaching course. It's not casting a perfect 12-inch loop at 65 feet. It is about your coaching technique. It's about your interaction, especially with kids, with younger kids, and how to run a session really well and adapt it to all client groups' needs and preferences. And so I got a great deal out of these courses about the coaching techniques and what, you know, things to look out for, the different, not only coaching techniques, but you learn about learning techniques as well. You know, how different individuals within a group will have different learning traits that you look for, identify quickly, and then coach to those traits. Because if you're coaching someone who's a verbal learner and you're trying to show them what to do, you're going to get nowhere. Yeah, so it's about this sort of coaching side of things, which I really enjoy as well. Yeah, there's nothing more rewarding than seeing that moment when it clicks.
Yeah, it's really important, that aspect as well, because you could easily go down a route of doing what you do every day. And like you rightly say, people learn in different ways, at different speeds. And I know the guides we had working with me, I'd even teach them about body language and teach them to look for signs. Mm-hmm. Are they tired? Do they need a break? All those sorts of silly little things.
Yeah.
Because after all, it's about them having enjoyment, isn't it? And it's not about getting through day. So that it's about their day. They've given up a day and it's their day out with me or the team, or in your case, yourself. And so you make every day special for every single person, don't you? It's really important, that, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's an individual experience. You know, again, a much overused word is bespoke. You know, but actually look it up in the dictionary, and bespoke has to mean bespoke. I do pride myself on not ever using the automatic email reply, and you know, building a rapport with the client. And trying to really get to know them and know what their expectations are, and if you can deliver those expectations or hopefully exceed them. And like you say, even the fundamentals of watching out for fatigue, both mental and physical fatigue, and keeping sessions to the right length, the right locations, all these sort of things. I would honestly say that if you don't come back, or if you come back from a day's guiding and you don't feel a little bit fatigued, you're probably not trying hard enough, because you should be switched on all the time. Even if it's one of the good old mates that are you've got out on mates rates. And again, it kind of brings you on to one of the downsides, one of the difficulties of guiding, is when you've got good friends who you want to go out fishing with, they're also conscious that if they're coming out fishing with you on a really nice day in the middle of the season, they're potentially, if they just come out fishing with you and say, "That was great, see you next time I'm up," they've basically taken up couple of hundred quid out of your pocket, which makes them feel bad. But then you don't want to charge them, do you? Because they're your mates, and it's kind of like it's difficult balancing act. Fishing guide really bloody complicates fishing. When it's no longer just a thing that you go and do, you kind of like, oh god, you have to think about this and think about that. And on top of that, you're also, I'm getting better at it. 8 years in, I'm getting a little bit better at just going fishing. But I find it very difficult to just go fishing, because I am still always thinking about the next Instagram post, this bit of Facebook. Oh, could I do a video here? This venue be good for kids? All these things are constantly going through your head. So have some sympathy for the poor fishing guide. You know, it might be the dream job, but it's not always a bed of roses. Having said that, I cannot think of a single thing in the world I'd rather be doing than this. Don't get me wrong, I am not complaining at all. like I mentioned before, I am so proud to have such a high proportion of returning clients, because for me there is no bigger accolade possible than a client coming back. You know, it means a massive deal to me. So it's really, really quite something. And I wish the only thing is I wish I could clone myself sometimes. Because I'm so maxed out There's a lovely guy, I'll give him a shout, James Curley, a guy over in Elphin, who's a really nice guy, great character, and a really keen and accomplished fisherman. And I've actually encouraged him to also set himself up as a fly fishing guide, because I was having to turn down just so many clients. It really pains me to turn down a client, and I have to say primarily not from a financial point of view. I'm not like, oh God, I lost that money. No, it's because they might miss out on discovering Ascent, and that actually really pains me. It knew how wonderful this place is. It's weird. It's like, you know, I'm like a dad who's proud of his son, which I am as well. But it's, I want to show off Ascent. I want to people to see how wonderful it is. And quite often people say, oh, well, you've got to be careful, get too busy. It's like, nah. We've got so much capacity up here that, the usual suspects, the usual easy access locks where, you know, there are people, there are fishermen who come here religiously every year, and they go and they do their locks that they know on the boats that they know, and they just go and do it, da, 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 and they have a wonderful week. That's great. But I've had a few of them have actually said, I've been coming to Ascent for 13 years. I don't really need a guide, but I've never caught fish as big as I've seen on your videos. How do you do it? I'll have half a day out with you. And very often they'll have a half day out with me, and they'll say, at the end of the day, they'll say, right, I'll see you next year. Because they suddenly realise that they, although they've been coming here for 13 years, I've been fishing here for 40 years and living here for most of those 40 years, and I'm still discovering new stuff. So, to get that foot up the ladder, that's, again, why you people, I guess, take fishing guides for different reasons, but I see my reason, one of my primary reasons as being there as a guide, especially for the accomplished angler, is I can basically pass on to you as much of my 40 years of intelligence gathering in a day, and you can then go away from that with that in your back pocket going, right, this is what Stuart said, that, and he's got no reason to tell me anything other than the best possible thing, because if I give an angler information that's good information, they go and act on it and get the results they want. That's maybe why they keep on coming back, is because, have you got any more information? Because that was really good. I'd like to, can you, maybe talk about some other things like the small streams, stuff like that. What's this pollock you're talking about? I never thought that was here. I mean, even, actually discovering new stuff. Saltwater fly fishing, I actually only started that about 5 years ago. It was just an absolute... And it just blew my mind. Straight away, I nearly snapped a 9-weight trout rod and thought, I need to get some proper kit. And then I did get some proper kit, and I actually snapped a 9-weight Vision GT saltwater on a fish that I've never seen to this day. So there are some bloody big ones there. My record in the last 5 years is a 12.5-pound pollock on the fly. Which was a complete fluke to get in, because he took me near the surface and did a big circle, didn't do his first dive, and I still managed to keep his nose up. He was on his side thumping away, and a big wave came in and washed him onto a rock shelf. He was still way too fresh to be landed, but I grabbed him, got a photo, and tucked him back in the water.
Tell me, Stuart, something really interesting to me is about the pollock thing as well. And we're going to talk a little bit more about the fishing and your favourite sort of fishing. But pollock, how are you chasing those? Is that with a sink line, a die 5 or something? And then how are you actually manipulating the fly? How do you go about catching those pollock on the fly?
Yeah, and I'm actually really glad you asked that, because I had a chance this year. I was... supposed to go down to the Orbis Saltwater Fly Fishing Festival down in Chichester and do a presentation and some fly tying demos on exactly this. But then COVID came along, and although travel restrictions were lifted, I had such a backlog of clients and had lost so much from early in the season, I just simply couldn't do it. So I had to you know, carry on my season up here because it was in the middle of, you know, it was towards the tail end of the season. But I couldn't afford to take like 5 days out from what was on. So yeah, so basically it's shore fishing. I don't go out in a boat. So it's accessing these sometimes quite precipitous marks, so you've got to be steady on your feet. You must be an accomplished caster because the equipment you're using is pretty damn heavy. As you say, fast sinking lines. Having said that, you can also catch pollock on poppers, which is incredible. I mean, these things, when they're on the popper, when they're looking at the surface, these things come up out of the kelp from up to, you know, 20 feet down. And they just come straight up and come out of the water like a Polaris missile, he said, showing his age. They just launch themselves cartwheel, usually missing the pollock, missing the popper. But, you know, keep it pulling. It slow pulls, you might get it. But generally, I'll fish sinking line. So you're looking at something like the Rio Outbound Orvis Depth Charge. There's another one from Vision. There's various ones, but these lines have a 35 to 40 foot, if you like, integrated head, which is very fast sinking. You want to get as close to 9 inches per second as you can. And then the running line behind that is actually an intermediate line, which is really good because that means you're casting these heavy dumbbell eyes, you know, 3/8 of an inch dumbbell tungsten dumbbells, chucking them out. You know about when one of those hits you on the back of the head, I can tell you. You're chucking them quite far out, and then you're waiting sometimes up to a minute, and I mean literally 60 seconds, for this to sink down and that head, the head of the line, to actually settle into the kelp. Doing basically foot-long retrieves, a strip of a foot at a time, strip, every foot a second in sharp strips in. Sometimes when you see, if you want to fish right into under your feet, when you see the head, because there's usually a colour change in the line, you see the head of the line just starting to come to the surface, you then pause for 10 seconds. To let that head sink down again and then carry on with your strip. And very often that'll induce a take on the, just as the fly, if you imagine it going along through the kelp and then the fly turns up. So it looks like a fish trying to make an escape. That's when it'll trigger. I've done quite a bit of underwater filming to get an insight into how the pollock follow the fly and go for it. And the number of follows and refusals you get is astounding. Pretty much here, almost every cast that I filmed the retrieve coming in, I would see at least one or two pollock following it and then turning away. So they are a little bit picky. So you have to persist. The other thing that I was going to demonstrate down in Chichester, which I would really like the opportunity to, was the weed guard system that I've come up with, and it's a fairly standard weed guard that you tie on, but with one important difference, and that is the fact that along the body of the fly, if you can picture this, there you don't tie the mono that you're using to go around the bend of the hook and tie back in at the head to form the weed guard. It's like a normal loop weed guard, but the mono is not tied all the way down the body. What you have to hold it and for and shape it around the bend is actually a silicon tube of the type you get for putting air through an aquarium into a bubble machine in an aquarium system. So I have done a video on it. You can probably find it somewhere if you put in Ascent Fly Fishing Weed Guard. I guess you'd find it on Google. But basically, this was born out of necessity because most of the marks that I fish from for pollock, they're often quite restricted. Like I say, there's sometimes precipitous marks with a rock face not very far behind you. Now, these fast sinking lines, they're pretty easy to load the rod. But you do tend to smack the fly off the rocks behind you. And what that was causing was the fly would always hit the rocks on the just above the bend of the hook. And that fly on your back cast, when it's going around the tail end of that loop, is probably travelling close to the speed of sound. It's going to be doing about 400 to 600 miles an hour. And when that smacks into the rock, best case scenario is you just destroy the fly material. More often than not, you'd actually snap the hook, even really high-quality stainless hooks. So putting this tube down the body of the hook actually acted as a shock absorber. And I could, you know, hear the fly tap the rock, and then I'd go and look at it, and it was absolutely fine. But also, it's a really nice, easy, neat way to tie a weed guard, so I'd recommend people go and look at it. As people, you know, I've spoken to some of the people I took fishing, and they've been fishing all, but I'm going to use this, I'm going to tie it. You should patent it. You should really should patent it. And I'm like, have you seen how much a patent costs? He said, no, just call, if you get, if people could just call it the AFF weed guard forever, that'll just be doing me, that's, you know, I'll go down in perpetuity with that way. But I've researched as much as I can. I can't see anything like it. This use of a silicon tube as to hold the weed guard in place, but yeah, it works really well. The flies that I use, they're size 01, and usually maybe 4 inches long in total, 4 to 6 inches of material in total. And with that weed guard on it, you can actually let it sink literally into the kelp. And as you're doing the retrieve, you can feel the fly bouncing off the stalks of the kelp. And that's where you want to be, because that's where the fish are. I've fished alongside people fishing with fixed spool reels, chucking baits, plugs, perks, all sorts of stuff in the water. And not only do they lose, you know, they're standing there just throwing 5-pound notes in the water, it would appear sometimes. Not only do you not lose anywhere near as much kit as them, you actually outfish them, because you're fishing right down in the zone where the fish are actually waiting to ambush any injured fish that they see. So yeah, it's another aspect of the fishing here that I was astounded to discover. Monica was really pleased when I discovered that the pollock season really starts to pick up round about October, the beginning of October, and then it tails off round about the beginning of March. So the trout season starts round about the beginning of March and tails off, well, the beginning of October. So we now have year-round fishing here, which is kind of nice. But it's very difficult to sell the winter pollock fishing as a guiding experience, simply because of the weather. I tried pushing it foolishly 1 year. I'm not going to do it again, because I had a couple of clients that tried to get up here and ended up just turning round, because, you know, they'd be halfway up here on a long trip up from down south and the weather had turned, and they'd just go like, it's just not worth us coming, is it? And I'm like, no, not really, sorry. Here's a deposit back, you know. But I mean, I've got one guy at the moment who's just sitting waiting. He's actually just down in the Black Isle, so he's only like a couple of hours away. So we're hopefully looking for a gap in the COVID thing and the weather window sometime soon. And that he can just pop up and I'll show him the pollock fishing here. Because at the moment, this time of year, the pollock fishing in sort of November, December, January is the absolute most incredible time for pollock fishing up here. And yeah, it's just another aspect of Ascent that will blow your mind. It's really quite good. And living in a real paradise.
You sounds like it. So here's a question for you. I think I know the answer is going to be all of it. But we've covered, you know, we've talked about the salmon fishing and these, what sound amazing rivers, lock fishing for brown trout, small streams for brown trout, pollock fishing. Which one's your favourite?
Yeah, it's a difficult one. It's a difficult one. Right now, I would say, yeah, the small stream is probably my favourite, I think. I need to give myself a really good kick up the backside. I really want to do a guidebook to the small streams up here. My granddad on my father's side is J.H. Yates, and he moved out to South Africa from Britain, and he wrote a couple of books on fishing out there. And it's really, yeah, something that I would actually be really keen to do is write a guidebook, but make it a sort of I don't know what you call it, a story guidebook. My planned format is each stream will have a little story at the beginning of it of something that happened there or something about the stream, a mythical tale about something that happened at the stream or one of my personal experiences of that stream. And then the more technical section of this is where you park, this is the walk-in, these are the pools, this is what to use, so that sort of thing. So, and every time I mention it, it's like, oh yeah, you got to do that, and it's like, yes, I know I've got to do it, but you know, I need to on and get it done. I've made a start, but I need to get it done. So yeah, my favourite type of fishing is the small stream, but then yeah, I do really love all of the other, I'd have to say, not my least favourite, but the thing I do the least of, the least amount, is probably salmon. That is the one that I enjoy, but I don't invest as much of my time in it. It's very hit and miss. It can be very expensive. And to me, that's not a great combo. I know it maybe increases the allure of it. However, I would probably sooner chase a trophy trout that I can go and sit and watch. And actually, in some locks, one lock in particular that really got me into the specimen hunting, that, you know, still water sight fishing for 20-inch wild brown trout, it doesn't get much more intense than that sometimes. Check out one of my videos, it's called In Plain Sight, of me and a Belgian client. And this Belgian client was one of the guys, as I've been fishing in Assen for, I think it was 16 years, and I've always done very well, but I just, how are you catching these big trout? I don't know, how do you do it? He came out for a half day with me, and sure enough, everything just went. I could not have planned it. Could not have written it better. It just came out just absolutely perfect. That the conditions were really, really tough. So we went and sat on a high cliff and watched. And sure enough, on cue, along came this monster trout and just started cruising around. And then a slight breeze came in from the northwest, giving a little bit of movement to the water. It meant he could get a line on the water safely without spooking it. And yeah, and he got it. And it was just the most incredibly beautiful, massive trout. And it's just like, yeah, it made his day. So yeah, that's pretty intense and rewarding as well. The small stream, I think, for me, there's not many ways of fishing that are more absorbing. Because river fishing at any time is very engaging because the water's moving and you're reading it maybe a little more than still water fishing. So fishing the small stream, that's almost amplified because very complicated moving water, and you're exploring your way usually upstream, and even if you know, like, you know, I know some of these streams exceptionally well, but I still get that feeling of anticipation as I fish my way up to the base of a waterfall, and then what's the pool looking like above it? Yeah, I know exactly what the pool looks like above it, but I still have that sense of this is an adventure, and I'm going exploring and picking the pockets and fishing the glides and just working your way upstream. And I don't know of any other type of fishing that is so absorbing and meditative in that it completely engages your mind to the sacrifice of everything else. You're not going to be thinking about bloody COVID when you're trying to place your fly into that 4-inch square patch of water 6 yards ahead of you to just get it to drift and then mend your line straight away to the left so that it doesn't drag out of there too quickly. It just completely fills your entire brain with just you, that patch of water, and hopefully a few little trout. And that, I think, is really valuable in the situation we're in at the moment. But even at the best of times, it is really good to have that complete, it is a meditation. There's a great buzzword these days of mindfulness, and this is the epitome of that. It totally takes you to this one place doing one thing, and you don't think about your gear, you don't think about anything other than just you, the water, and the fish. That's it. So yeah, and for me, the small stream really amplifies that, and I think that's why it has engaged me so much. And again, the fishing the wee burns here, it's actually quite a new thing. This is something I probably only started maybe 7 years ago, and it wasn't a thing. This ultra lightweight fishing, you know, this fishing with 2 and 3 weight rods, it has always been done, but from what I've seen, it's really gained popularity lately, you know, in recent years. This 2 and 3 weight 6 foot rods, oh, you know, harking back, you know, to the cane rods and things like that. And it definitely was not on people's radar for fishing in Assent, because the lochs here are so good that people would come here loch fishing, and that's what I did. I grew up loch fishing here, and it's great. It is fantastic. There's amazing fishing from boat and shore up here, and it was actually, I was walking up to a loch a few years back, and it's a blazing hot day. I mean, it was just, you know, the gorse was cracking off shots, and the heat coming off the heather was just absolutely stifling. And I was trudging up to this loch, and a lovely loch to fish, but the trudge up was alongside a stream for a short way, and I just looked down at this pool that was in the shade of this gorge, and I thought, I just need to go and sit in that for a while. And so I went down, struggled down the bank, and I thought, well, you know, I've got my rod set up. I'll just get a nice bit of water over there. I'll chuck a fly in it. Fly hit the water, and a trout took it straight away. And this is a lovely little 6-inch trout. I thought, oh, that was quite good fun. So I put the fly out again and got another fish. I was like, oh, this is all right. And it just, from there, that was it. It was just like, this is it. And this was with a 6-weight loch rod. And straight away I thought, I'm a little overpowered here. And I went, and then I went and I bought, one of the first rods I got was, unfortunately they don't make it anymore, a Vision Glassic, which is, it was a little 6'8", 2 to 3 weight. And I put one of Barrio's small stream lines through it. And I was just like, this is fly fishing distilled. you know, such a connection to the cast I'd never felt. You know, it was just, it's beautiful, beautiful. And and from then it's just, and I suddenly realized that the most insignificant little burn up here, and I mean one that is literally 2.5 feet wide, you can pull an 8-inch trout from that on this little gear. It's just fabulous, just absolutely, because you're just really stalking and creeping up the water. So yeah, a long answer to a simple question.
That's really interesting, and that sounds right up my street as well. Those little tiny little streams and those little surprises that appear when you make a good cast and get a good drift are part of everything. But Stuart, we've talked for over an hour now, and you've painted such a wonderful picture of Ascent and the fishing and your passion for it there. If people were thinking of heading your neck of the woods and wanted to get hold of you, how would they do that?
I've got a thanks to Monica, a comprehensive online presence. So if they just looked for Ascent Fly Fishing, that's Assynt, actually comes from a Norse word, I believe, meaning rocky ridge. So Ascent Fly Fishing. You can find me on Facebook, my website, astonflyfishing.com, Twitter and all those, Instagram and all those good things. Just get in touch or just give me a call or whatever, and I'd be more than happy. And I'm more than happy to, you know, just give people some pointers. You know, I used to be very, when I first started out, I was very precious and protective, but then I realized that there's so much fishing up here. I can give you good advice and get you started, and I'm more than happy to do that. The next level up from that was, the services I offer, I obviously do a couple of hours introductory casting session in the field in front of my house, right up to multi-day safaris, which are wilderness trips, either in like an expedition style of carrying everything on your back, or I even have almost luxury glamping. I've got a 5-meter bell tent with a wood burning stove in it now that we can set up in the wilderness at the head of a loch, transport it in by boat or Argocat, or hopefully even next year pack pony, which could be an interesting addition. And everything in between. When I was thinking of what the services I could offer, I thought, what would I potentially want if I was going, say, to a foreign country or somewhere I had very little idea about, other than knowing that there was good fishing there? I would want something that I would call a fly fishing consultancy. So I could go to meet a local guide, either at his place or at a cafe or whatever, and sit down and have this guide's undivided attention for an hour. And we can pore over the maps and talk about flies and talk about the fishing in the area. And I could just get a really good overview. And then he'd say, right there, you know, do you want to buy a permit from me? There you go. And off you go. And so I do offer those as well, those fly fishing consultancies, if someone, because you look at the Ordnance Survey map for up here, and there is almost as much water as there is solid ground. So it can be quite intimidating. And if you're coming up here for, say, a week's family holiday, and you've got one, maybe 2 days fishing, you might you might not have the financial means to take a guide out, but you also want to know that you're going out with the best chance of success. So how are you going to do it? You can wade through all sorts. There's a lot of crap on the internet. There's a lot of crap in some magazines. There's a lot of information that's not very good out there. A lot of myths that are, well, just that, myths. So if I could sit down with a guide over a cup of coffee and a bit of cake with the map, and just talk. So, you know, I offer those little things as well. They're all on the website, and you know, link on the contact form to the website as well. So yeah, I'd say definitely, regardless of whether you engage with me or use my services, just get up here and just discover it. That you'll have one regret. You'll have one regret when you come up to Assen and discover the fishing here, and that is that you hadn't done it sooner. And I have actually had, and I mean that sincerely, because I have actually had elderly clients almost in tears, and I mean almost in tears, saying, fuck it, if I had found this place sooner, if I had been here, this place is so special to me already. I wish with all my being I had spent my life. And that maybe gives you an idea of what this place can do to you. Because it does it to me. And I live here, so, you know, it's pretty special.
Well, it's been fantastic to get an insight.
I discovered it sooner. And I only...
It's been fascinating to get an insight into your life, what the fishing means to you, and to give us a picture of what it's about. And it does sound absolutely fantastic. So, Stuart, thank you for taking the time to talk with me today. It's been fabulous to listen about such varied and wonderful fishing. And I wish you every success with your business looking ahead as well. And I hope when things sort themselves out that you have a busy guiding book and a busy guiding diary. So thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today.
And thank you, Pete. It's very much appreciated. I do enjoy talking about what I love so much, and so to have a public platform to do it on is very much appreciated. And I'd just like to say to everyone, thank you for listening, and get in touch with any questions you've got. I'm more than happy to get you addicted to this place. And for yourself, Pete, just keep up the good work. It's really helping people who maybe can't access the fishing they love to just stay very connected through some wonderful writing. So keep that up as well, mate. Much appreciated.
Okay. Thank you, Stuart Yates. It's been great having you along. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the Fly Culture podcast. I hope you've enjoyed this one as well, listening to so much fascinating and varied fishing as well. So thank you for listening. I want to do a little shout out to David Chitty and his friends down in Australia. We've got a little bit of a readership and listenership down there. And David sends me from time to time some beautiful pictures of the wonderful streams he's fishing in Australia. So I'm really enjoying those right now. So thank you to you guys as well. And thanks to everyone for listening to the Fly Culture podcast. Plenty more coming very, very soon.
The Fly Culture podcast is brought to you in association with Fly Culture, a quarterly print magazine. For more information, please visit flyculturemag.com. You can also find Fly Culture on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.